Welcome to the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM. Now here's your host, Dr. Mike Wall.
Today we have a special conversation with Premier Andrew Fury. Premier Fury was born and raised in Newfoundland and Labrador. And prior to taking the helm as our 14th premier in the province, he was known as Dr. Andrew Fury and has had a heralded career as an orthopedic trauma surgeon and educator with Memorial University's School of Medicine. Now, he completed his trauma training at the world-renowned Johns Hopkins University, and he also holds a diploma in organizational leadership from Oxford University. His career in medicine and dedication to charitable work has earned him a lot of awards on the provincial and national levels, and these honors include the Humanitarian of the Year by the Canadian Red Cross and the Governor General of Canada's Meritus Service Cross. I called him at his office in the Confederation Building to talk about a variety of topics that relate to his work as the Premier, but also his approach towards health and wellness, both personally and professionally. In the first part of our conversation, we talked about his work helping those in the developing world, including Haiti and Bangladesh, with Team Broken Earth, much of which was captured in his new book called Hope in the Balance, A Newfoundland Doctor Meets a World in Crisis. As we'll hear, these experiences have helped define him as a person, family man, and a leader. We'll also discuss the challenges for health we face as a province, including how we stack up to the rest of Canada in terms of our health as a population, and more importantly, what we need to do to improve it. On a personal note, I've known the Premier for nearly a decade and can attest that he takes his own health very seriously and commits to regular exercise and a healthy eating regimen. We'll dive into how he addresses his own personal health habits and stays fit with a hectic schedule. And lastly, what's on everybody's mind, we'll discuss the COVID-19 pandemic and the recent changes to the Atlantic bubble, why we need to still adhere to public health measures, and what's the latest news on the potential for a vaccine. So, when you get the opportunity to interview the Premier, you ask a lot of questions, so we got a lot to cover. Let's listen in. Welcome to the show, Premier Fury.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great. Today we're chatting about health. It's a health and wellness show. But one of the things I want to really dig into today is the very unique perspective you bring to the table, being a physician and being the Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador. Give me a bit of a background on your path, you know, through a physician and then to the Confederation Building career-wise.
Well, that's a very open-ended and long question, isn't it?
Sure.
I always wanted to give back. I always wanted to help people. I was drawn to medicine, not just for the academic pursuit and the quest of curiosity, but also probably more importantly towards the empathetic, altruistic draw to help people. And I think that comes from a family history of public service and rising to challenges. And I was quite happy in that role and loved all my patients and got quite a bit of self and fulfillment and professional fulfillment from that role. But I always wanted felt a draw to do more. And of course that started, that was the impetus for Broken Earth and giving back using our skills and our good fortune here in Canada and in Newfoundland and Labrador to distribute that around the world to try to address some of the inequities that exist elsewhere in our small way. And, and then that, of course, led to the further call of public service when I saw the challenging times that Newfoundland and Labrador is facing and we're all currently facing, whether it be the fiscal crisis, the demographic crisis, or the current public health crisis. We're in a dark spot, but you can either put the helmet on and go downstairs in your basement and hope that it all ends, or you can see this time of disruption as a potential to reinvent and reimagine Newfoundland and Labrador for the future. And I saw this as an opportunity to contribute. People always ask me why I would do it now, and the answer is generally quite simple. It's because I need to be able to look my children in the eye and in 10 years and 20 years from now and tell them that I did everything that I could during what's arguably Newfoundland and Labrador's darkest hour. So, I mean, that's a kind of succinct path to where mm-hmm. to where we are today. But I'm happy to expand on any element of those.
Well, I think that you said something about helping when things are dark. Your book is really a collection of stories about how you became a physician and some of the stories about being in Haiti and operating on somebody in a dark room when a secondary earthquake kind of hits and there's dust and everything else going around there. Like, how did those experiences change you as a physician?
Well, the first trip to Haiti, it changed me as a physician, as a husband, as a father, and genuinely as a person. You know, I say in the book, and it's true, you know, global health was never on my radar. It was not something, you know, that I pursued in medical school. And although my colleagues did, and some of my colleagues did, and I was their biggest champion and cheerleader, but it was just not something that wasn't on my chip. And then when I saw the earthquake in Haiti, I was compelled to act partially because of my trauma training. But when I was there, it was life-changing. It was a life-altering. It was a combination of professional, spiritual, personal, political movement inside that really made me realize that stuff that we probably all know, but it's not in our frontal lobe every day, is that how lucky we are to have been born in Canada and live in Newfoundland and Labrador and reap the benefits of those who have walked before us. But we do so, when we do so, we carry a sense of responsibility that also has to be displayed on a global stage. And being in Haiti in the ruins of the earthquake made me recognize that Canada and the fortune that we've been blessed with has a responsibility to play to help those less fortunate around the world. You know, personally, it changed me as well, in that, you know, you're standing in this kind of collapsed hospital and it really looked like all hope could be lost, yet there were small patient interactions, including a young girl who was looking after her grandfather whose hip we fixed. And despite the chaos, despite the rubble, despite the overwhelming gravity of the situation, you could see in this young girl's eyes some hope for a better future for Port-au-Prince and for Haiti. And you know, she, looking in her eyes, really changed my life as well, because even in the darkest of times, in the belly of a rubble hospital, there was this hope. And you know, I don't subscribe to the notion that you know, hope is no strategy. I don't, you know, that may be a quick soundbite, but, you know, hope should be a fundamental input of any strategy. It may not be a strategy in isolation, but strategy without hope is no strategy at all.
And likely the efforts were all because you believed you could make a difference as well. And that's part of it goes hand in hand with hope.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, but you don't have to be a doctor to make a difference in your own communities. And I think part of it is just realizing that, you know, we're all in this together, right? And the fundamental premise that one of, you know, not to get too spiritual in any, but one of the kind of goals of life should be just as simple as leave the place a little better than you found it.
Right.
And if, you know, everyone believes in that, then ultimately the place will be better.
Was there any chapter in that book that really stood out to you? I thought it was really interesting when you started traveling to Bangladesh because you had networked with a different group of people when you were doing your postgraduate work. But what was something that really stood out as a different sort of thing?
Oh, Bangladesh was, you know, completely different. You know, Dhaka has a population density, I may be off by a little bit here, but I think almost like 10 times or 8 times or something the population density of New York City. You know, it's a true mega city and comes with its own issues, obviously. So first of all, you're kind of overwhelmed with just the mass of humanity. And, you know, I think it's something that we all, or certainly some of us think about, in that, you know, the world, how the world's population is distributed. And it's easy, I think, sitting in the comfort of North America and watching North American TV to forget that we represent a small portion of the world's population. Mm-hmm. But it kind of hit you immediately in Bangladesh. But then outside of that, you really saw that this was a developing country that had its, you know, there was no earthquake, but it equally was struggling to develop and catch up to the rest of the developed world, like Haiti. The parallels aren't always obvious, but the ones that are generally related towards the low income scenario and seeing a population trying to reach the next income bracket, if you will. We all talk about, you know, North America growing the middle class on a global stage. The low middle income countries are trying to get to the next rung as well, and you could sense that in Bangladesh. The people there were absolutely spectacular, amazing, and you know, one of the most one of the trips that also changed me within Bangladesh was going to the Rohingya refugee camps and seeing this massive population who've been displaced from their homes and living in tents and temporary structures. And it, you know, as I'm describing this, I'm sure even your listeners are thinking like it's a collection of tents or probably the size of a small campsite. There's millions of people, you know, in a temporary space that had, because of, you know, just normal human behavior and sociological development, that was organized into grids, and you could see commerce. Yet, you know, these people had been chased from their homes and were living in these temporary shelters. That was quite moving and quite powerful to kind of look out, and all you could see, you know, hill beyond hill was covered in tents, and this was definitively temporary, because the year before these were all green, lush, rolling hills. Quite moving and really struck a chord with me.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went to the Far East, I realized I was on planet Earth, because a huge proportion of the population live very, very differently than we do here. And I guess that
Before we leave that, I really, you know, not to, should be promoting my own book, but I'm not. I'm going to promote this book called Factfulness that I really encourage your listeners to pick up and read. It's definitely a timely book, even though it's a few years old now. But you know, it's easy to kind of concentrate on the negatives in life, but and to reminisce romantically about how 20 years was 20 years ago was better than we are today. It's actually not true. And if you kind of look at you look at it objectively, and this book helps you do that. It's a really quick, easy read to really reset your frame of reference, especially in what you can, and sometimes like these, you can only kind of see the negatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like quality of life and life expectancy and treatment for
neonatal, you know, life expectancy, maternal fatality, neonatal, you know, pediatric mortality rates. All of these things are improving on a global stage. Globally, children are living longer, and that's fantastic, and it's something that we should celebrate. But it's also something that it creeps, and so you don't kind of, you know, there's no postage stamp necessarily with that statistic, right? This Factfulness book is fantastic. It's an easy read. I think I'm encouraging my children to read it as well. You know, although everything is important, obviously locally, but it also kind of gives you a bigger frame of reference sometimes, which especially in today's day and age is sometimes you lose sight of. And I mean, it's not just me. I think I could be mistaken, but I think Warren Buffett was so attracted to this book, he bought it for all the high school graduates in Nebraska one year.
Wow. We're talking with Premier Andrew Furey about health and wellness in our province and his experiences working as a physician in the developing world. If you want to learn more, you can pick up his new book, Hope in the Balance, A Newfoundland Doctor Meets a World in Crisis. I already picked up my hard copy here locally, but there's also an ebook available online. Now we're going to jump to a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about the state of health here in Newfoundland and Labrador.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
Welcome back. We're here with Premier Andrew Fury talking about health and wellness here at home in Newfoundland and Labrador. Let's get back to our conversation. So we know that obviously in other parts of the world where you've traveled and done medicine, things are very, very different. But here at home, we've got our own specific challenges. What are some of the challenges that Newfoundlanders face in the province when it comes to healthcare?
Well, you know, Newfoundland and Labrador face this tremendous challenge in healthcare. It's no secret. We spend the most money per capita on healthcare out of any province. And as I've said many times, look, if we were all living to be 120 and playing tennis and had active, healthy lifestyles, then by any stretch, that is a good return on investment of those healthcare dollars. Mm. Unfortunately, the reality is the exact opposite. We're spending the most per person per year on healthcare in Canada, yet we have the highest burden of disease, the lowest life expectancy, and some of the lowest quality of life in our senior years. Mm. So there represents not just an economic challenge, but an incredible social challenge as well. So what we need to do is figure out a way to reinvest and invest in the social determinants of health. Mm. So things like active, healthy living, smoking cessation, exercise. These are the things that we need to be encouraging and teaching our children so that they develop and grow into active, healthy lifestyles, and then that will pay a dividend down the road. That's an economic equation that plays out over time. There's no question about that. But if you don't plant the seed for the tree, it will never grow. And we need to figure out how to do that now so that future generations do not carry both the economic and the health burden that our current aging population carries.
Yeah, I agree with that 1,000%. I grew up in an active household. It just was second nature to me. But I think that a lot of people don't realize what they should be doing. What are some things you hope to accomplish as a premier then when it comes to removing these barriers to better health?
Yeah, and I think we need to figure out how to, and I'm quite happy that Dr. Parfrey and Sister Elizabeth have stepped up to help in this respect, but to figure out if fundamentally is our health system meeting the needs of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, because we critically haven't looked at that in quite some time, arguably since the introduction of Medicare. So more than just the brick and mortar of, you know, where hospital exists, are we providing the services that are required of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians? And equally, are we motivating, incentivizing appropriately for Newfoundlanders and Labradorians to be more active and more healthy, whether that's through other jurisdictions have done this, you know, with fitness tax credits, simple things, but also making sure, you know, that an investment in a recreational facility is not just an investment for the municipality or for the local business community. It can be an investment in people's future in terms of healthcare. So providing safe walking spaces, providing opportunities that children can skate, can play basketball, can be afforded the option to partake in active, healthy living, I think is something that we need to critically look at to ensure that they are having opportunities so that this again is all, you know, planting the seed so that they live with less of a burden of disease and hopefully longer than the generation before them.
That's right. Well, one of those social determinants of health is money to be able to pay for sports. And if there's a community center or something that allows people to get exercise in an affordable way, that's something that will help them and remove that barrier, which is a huge hurdle for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in specific, like in the rural areas, what are some things that the people in the rural Newfoundland that we can do, you think, to help promote their own health when they may not have access to some of the same benefits and facilities that you might see in larger urban centers?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that always remains a challenge, and it's a challenge of our geography and a challenge of our history. But as we are kind of emerging from this pandemic, we've also seen the value of virtual programs, whether it's in delivering services like healthcare, but can also be extended to recreation. I'm also very impressed as I drive around the province about how municipalities have cooperated to pool funds so that their combined municipalities, even though you know you're not amalgamating anything, they're pooling funds towards a common recreational facility, which generally reflects the communities that they serve, I think, which is brilliant. There's no need to create two hockey rinks a stone throws apart when there's, you know, when there's a couple hundred children. You need to kind of pool resources to make sure they're being invested appropriately. And I've been very impressed with how communities are cooperating towards that. So looking at how to work together, but also how to be creative with virtual concepts and different styles of activities, I think is quite good. I mean, we've seen, you know, how you don't always need a spin class teacher now, right? You know, you can have virtual sessions for some of these communities, buying a few spin bikes in a room with a screen and virtual setup is within their reach, and encourages healthy, active participation, and one which is good on your joints, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we know about that. Yeah. And you know, virtual, we'll talk a little bit about your own personal fitness regime, because I know that's something that's really important to you, but just put your physician hat back on for one second. How big of a role does somebody play in their own health outcomes? So somebody walks into your clinic, what's the difference between somebody who takes care of themselves when it comes to outcomes or somebody who really is looking to you for the answer?
Yeah, I mean, that's not an easy answer. Obviously, everyone comes with their individual complexities and histories and social histories. But generally speaking, the better you look after yourself, more than generally, I mean, proven, the better you look after yourself in terms of healthy eating, active participating lifestyle, the better your health outcomes are. So, you know, things done in moderation, combined with, again, an active, healthy lifestyle are important. So it's not rocket science, right? As we all know, but again, I appreciate and understand the complexities of individuals when tackling some of these issues. So it's always important to be sensitive to individual needs. But as a general rule, you know, the more active, healthy you are, and the more healthy you eat, and you know, you watch, the obesity is a real issue for many, and I understand it's a struggle, and I'm very empathetic towards that. But obesity comes with a whole other level of risk factors, and it's not that's not Newfoundland, by the way. That's across North America, as we all know. Mm-hmm. So there's no judgment here to Newfoundland and Labrador in particular, but just as a medical metric, it's one that, you know, we can certainly try to control, whether it's watching, you know, calorie intake or meal size portions, balancing that with calorie output, with an active, healthy lifestyle.
We're here with the Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador, the Honorable Dr. Andrew Fury. When we come back, we'll learn how he keeps healthy while balancing family and work. From rowing in the regatta to regular workouts on the run, we'll find out how he tries to lead by example, especially when it comes to instilling the importance of health with his kids. We'll be right back.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
It could be his background as an orthopedic surgeon or as an athlete, but Premier Fury has kept up with his active lifestyle throughout his life. In this segment, he shares with us why he thinks staying healthy is so important for him, his family, and for all of us. Exercise has other benefits. It gives you lots of energy and allows you to focus. So let's talk about, why is exercise such an important part of your life, given that you've got a busy career, obviously, a busy home life, you know, you're involved in a million other activities. Why is exercise and eating well important to you?
Oh, exercise is key. I think you hit the nail on the head. People think there's two components of it for me. One is, you know, you feel better, you feel fit, and there is that, you know, that internal reward for doing so, whether it's, you know, lifting more weight, running a little bit faster, throwing a little bit harder, watching your times. There's that kind of internal motivation. But for me, as I'm getting a little bit older now, it's less about how much I can bench press and more about the mental health component of it. And I really find that I get, I think clearer, I act more rational, and my day is always better after a workout or run or row. One of them, and trying to balance that with a healthy diet is, all of those things feed into your mind, and mm-hmm. it's a balance of physical activity with the mental health rewards of it.
So run me through, I think it's always beneficial to hear what other people are doing, but what does your day look like when it comes to healthy living?
Yeah, so I generally try to, this has changed dramatically since COVID, obviously, but, and frankly, it's changed even in the last 5 years. 5 years ago, had you asked, I would have been at the gym 3 to 4 times a week, less cardio, more strength training. And now I've flipped into a kind of circuit training piece in the morning. Generally 3 to 4 times a week, and layered on top of that, I try to run 5 times a week. The real reason I'm not a great runner, my frame is too big, but the reason I've kind of flipped to running over the last 2 years, in 2 or 3 years in particular, I always ran a little bit, but I've been kind of concentrated at 5 times a week for the last couple of years, 3 years maybe. It's mobile. All you need is sneakers and a headset, and away you go. Mm-hmm. So with the level of traveling that I was doing before this job, it was certainly more versatile. But the rowing, I've rowed in the regatta a couple of times, and we still have a rowing group that sends out workouts. So I try to kind of do a different balance, whereas, 5 years ago, it was kind of more strength training. And then, I try as much as I can to get to hockey once a week as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I try to knock all that off in the morning, before the day starts. I really find, even before the chaos of this current job, that, your days don't become yourself. Even when it was a bit more predictable of a schedule, starting out the morning at 5:30, 6 a.m. with a run or a workout or a row really sets you up for a better mental health space in tackling the rest of your day.
Yeah, you've tended to choose careers that require decision making, so having a good clear head going into the day is not a bad thing. Okay, let's talk about, you mentioned it before about communities having access. The world is now opened up in fitness. You do some virtual workouts. You could get on Skype and you can get a workout in with a couple of dumbbells. Is that still effective?
Yeah, specific. Yeah, no, I found it great. So in the morning, myself, my training partner, will get on FaceTime work out together doing circuits. And I've been amazed because when the gyms close, what you can accomplish with, a 50-pound dumbbell, a 30-pound dumbbell, and really that's it. doing a combination of core squats, arms, dips. I've managed to turn a really small space into a pretty efficient gym. And I got to tell you, waking up at, 5:10 as opposed with no travel time, no commute, adds another layer of benefit to it because, oftentimes I can finish the workout and then see the kids before they go to school, which before going to the gym, I generally meet my workout partner at 6 and then go straight to work after that. Yeah. So this virtual workout, I was a bit skeptical at first, but yeah. I quite enjoy it now and it allows some different freedoms and perhaps more efficiency. That said, I've worked out in some of the gyms around town since the COVID restrictions, and I got to say they're doing a great job. And I do miss the kind of going to the gym as well and just putting in headsets and kind of lose yourself there for an hour of just doing straight strength training.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. And you just mentioned about your family too. Tell me about why you think that's important as a family, because your wife is active, you're active, your kids are active. How does that sort of work its way through your family?
Yeah, we try to encourage the active, healthy, balanced lifestyle. And my eldest plays volleyball. My middle child is in a lot of soccer. Very proud of her. Proud of them all, obviously. But you know, she plays a lot of soccer, mm-hmm. and which is great. You know, it's a good balanced sport, I think. And I also love the fact that volleyball and the soccer kind of develop a sense of team commitment and team play, in addition to being physically active. And then my youngest son plays soccer and hockey, and he just has a great time. And of course, you know, all of them, it really enjoy it. And I think, you know, the most important thing is they also equally see that my wife and I are also physically active, and hopefully we're leading by example, and they'll develop equally balanced, physically active lifestyles. And you know, collectively together, you know, we downhill ski. I know, you know, not everyone can do that, but it is a great family sport together. It's really allowed us to kind of have fun together and getting exercise at the same time. So it's, I think having a healthy family is perhaps more important than being healthy yourself.
Mm. And for those people looking to try, we've got our ski hills open this year, so there'll be some staycationing. Yeah. That's the Honorable Dr. Andrew Furey, Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador, giving us some insights into his health and wellness routine. I feel like his rowing crew may have a bit more pressure on them next summer if we're able to get back on the pond. Now, when we come back, we'll talk about how our lives have changed with the COVID-19 pandemic here at home, including our most recent news that our Atlantic bubble has shrunk. The Premier will share our government's decision to roll back the bubble in hopes of protecting us from the pandemic, which is spreading east, while keeping our economy open. He also shares an update on vaccine trials and what we know so far about how vaccinations will unfold here in the province. We'll be right back after this break.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
While COVID-19 cases are spiking around the world, here in Newfoundland and Labrador, we've had a relatively small number of cases. A very large part of that is due to the efforts of our citizens, communities, and government public health officials. In hopes of avoiding the challenges that other parts of the country are now facing, Premier Furey and Premier King of PEI have implemented a mandatory 14-day isolation period to travelers entering the province, even from our neighbors in the Atlantic bubble. I asked Premier Furey about why they decided to make these changes and what we need to do as a population to remain safe and take care of one another. Well, let's switch gears a little bit now, and let's talk about what's going on with the pandemic, because you happened to take over during the middle of the global pandemic, which is a once-in-a-lifetime type event. Right now, we've changed some of the restrictions. Why was it necessary to kind of shrink our bubble for the time being?
Yeah, I mean, we're a bubble in a bubble right now. When we were looking and weighing all the different variables in other jurisdictions, I think it's important not just to look at the case count, but it's also equally important to look at how the cases are being distributed. Mm-hmm. So with respect to community spread, so really thought that this pandemic is moving east, and we've seen it do so now with increasing cases in some of the other Atlantic provinces. And, you know, we have the added advantage in this case, it hasn't always been an advantage for us, of being an island and being able to isolate from others. And so we need to use whatever tools are in the toolbox right now to try to ensure that we're continuing to live with COVID-19, because there's never going to be a time where there's no COVID-19, mm-hmm. But that we have the capacity to contact, trace, and contain outbreaks should they occur, when they occur, mm-hmm. So that the economy can continue, people can keep going to gyms, we don't have to go back into a lockdown. So this was one of the this is one of the levers that we had, and I felt at this particular time when evaluating the virology of COVID-19 in other jurisdictions, that it was appropriate to act now. Mm. And, you know, it's not lost on me equally that Dr. Tam said just recently, I'm not sure if it was yesterday or the day before, that, you know, the sooner you the longer you wait to act, the longer the restrictions generally stay in place. Mm-hmm. And again, it intuitively makes sense, because if you overwhelm the contact tracers and the capacity that we have, as we've seen in other jurisdictions like Alberta and others in Toronto, that you can't contain it, and then you're forced into a lock. The only mechanism you have to contain it mm-hmm. is to lock down. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to prevent a lockdown. We're trying to continue with schools, and we've done a great job. And Newfoundlanders and Labradorians all deserve a round of applause. I know it hasn't been easy. I know it's been tough, and I know people are suffering for COVID fatigue, but everyone just needs to dig a little deeper and hold on a little longer, and hopefully we can get through this with our capacity intact to deal with cases when they arise. And now that we have this hope for a vaccine that's within our reach. So mm-hmm. everyone just needs to dig a little deep for a little longer. And I know that's a big ask, because there's been a big ask and a big response already, but we just need to hold on a little longer.
So with being shut down a little bit from the rest, or making it more difficult to access, I think that may create a false sense of security in people. How important is it for us to still follow the hand washing and the social distancing and the mask wearing and all those things?
That's incredibly important. I mean, those are the things that have been tried, tested, and proven, and have shown to limit the spread of the disease. And so it's incredible. You know, Dr. Fitzgerald and her team and the government have been very aggressive on implementing preventative measures. I think, you know, even recently, we're still seeing other provinces catch up to where we were, you know, 3 months ago. Mm. I'm very proud of how Newfoundlanders and Labradorians have responded to those measures, but we need to continue to do it. Mm. Continue to wear a mask, continue to social distance, and please avoid the temptation to gather in large gatherings. Mm. You know, we're trying to do all of these things so that the economy can keep going, businesses can keep open, and schools can keep open. So I know and appreciate the temptation, especially with COVID fatigue, to have large gatherings, especially as the season approaches. But we need to do our bit to just resist that temptation and for the greater good. And I'm incredibly proud of how Newfoundlanders and Labradorians have answered the call to date.
That's right. And you know, you said there was a bit of hope, because the vaccines there's more trials coming out every day. Canada is committed to buying apparently 10 times even what we may need as a country. But what will the Newfoundland response be when there's an opportunity to have access to a vaccine?
Of course, we're formulating that right now, and that'll be based on public health decision, but it certainly will be one that's triaged and stratified according to risk initially, so that we protect the most vulnerable in the society, healthcare providers, high-risk populations, and move from there. And again, this will all depend, as you suggested. Canada has rightfully, in my opinion, bet on all the developers. So hopefully, as these vaccines become available, there's not just one, there's three, and then the amount of vaccine that Canada has access to is tripled or quadrupled, depending on the regulatory environment. So, we're not there yet, and it will take time. It's not like, you know, January 1, or I saw in a media outlet earlier today that vaccinations are likely to begin in the second week of December in the United States. It still needs to be approved in Canada, mm-hmm. but it will take time to get everyone vaccinated, obviously, but we focus on the most vulnerable in the population. So, because that's the other way to flatten the curve, you know, we want to make sure that we're protecting the ones that would override the healthcare system capacity should we have massive outbreak.
Right. And for those people that may be concerned about the safety of the vaccine, can you quickly explain the amount of sure. rigor that Canada has? Because we're one of the most rigorous countries in the world when it comes to that.
Sure. And so is the FDA, to be fair to the United yep. States and our southern neighbors and the UK. You know, the vaccines have gone through the phases of clinical trials, and every time there's a clinical trial, whether it be a medication or a vaccine, there's a series of phases that you must go through in order to be available to the general public. And when they do those, it's treated with serious, significant scientific rigor in reporting side effect profiles. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, some drugs, some pharmaceuticals, for example, never make it to market because the side effect profile is too large. But in this case, the side effect, I'm not privy to all the internal findings of Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca, but certainly it's encouraging that they're not saying that there are massive side effect profiles. And certainly if there will be side effects, like there's side effects to waking up in the morning and walking to the bathroom, there's side effects to every action we take in life. But hopefully the side effects are such that the benefits of the vaccine are far, far greater than any side effect profile that would be associated with the vaccine. There are side effects to all vaccines, and sometimes that is introduced in a social debate that is generally unfounded, and hopefully that has been put to rest by the current literature. And I always encourage everyone to get the vaccines that their children should get and that they themselves should get in order to protect not just themselves, but others in the community.
That's right. Well, we had Minister Hagee on just a few weeks ago talking about the flu shot campaign and how easy it is now with the province and all the programs you guys have put in place to help with that as well. But we're winding down here. But first of all, I want to say thanks for taking the time today. Is there anything you'd like to say to the population of Newfoundland Labrador when it comes to a little message for their health before we leave?
Yeah, of course. You know, in these times of COVID-19, it's easy to neglect both your physical health and mental health. I encourage you all to become healthy. Physically healthy is one of the measures that we've seen through the research that can actually protect against any detrimental effects of COVID-19. The healthier you are, the better you would survive the virus should you get it. So look at adapting a healthy lifestyle, including a balanced diet and exercise, and please get your flu shots.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time today. I know you're a busy guy, so I'm going to let you get back to your job, but really appreciate you taking the time today.
Take care, and to everyone out there, stay safe, look after each other, and look after yourselves.
I'd like to thank the Premier for taking the time to talk to us today. We all know how busy he is with the challenges we face in the province right now, but I think the fact that he emphasized the importance of our health here at home should tell us something. Now, he holds an interesting perspective as both our premier and a physician, and he also lives by example when it comes to a balanced lifestyle. His message about us doing what we can to maintain and improve our physical and mental health during the pandemic really rang through with me, and I hope it did with you as well. Well, that's our show this week. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wall. We'll see you back here next week for another episode of the Wellness and Healthy Lifestyle Show on your VOCM.